You will please come to order. I'm sorry I woke up a couple of people out there. Again, good morning. With us this morning is Representative Peterson, Representative Seaton, Representative Johansson, Vice Chair Keller. We have on the agenda this morning three bills to consider: HB 333, Public Office Expense Term Account; HB 219, Fire and Emergency Medical Services; SCR 18, Raoul Wallenberg Remembrance Day. And at approximately 20 after, I'm going to excuse myself. I have one of my wonderful bills up in House Finance today. And so at that point, Vice Chair Keller will continue on. So with that, HB 333 is up. Would the presenters please come forward?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman.
Good morning. I believe we had we have a CS to adopt here.
Yes, sir.
Would you kind of quickly go through the difference between the one and the other and introduce yourself first, of course, and then we'll see about adopting the CS.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For your record purposes, I'm Representative Mike Hawker, District 32, Anchorage. There is a one-word difference in the CS from the bill that's originally introduced.
One word can be very important.
One word. On page 3 at line 16, the word where the word at appears, it says this subsection at the end of the term of office. It used to be, when it was originally drafted by our drafters, it said by the term of office. And there's that subtle difference between something that occurs at the term of office and something that occurs by the term of office. So the word was changed to at, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much. I always like to point out, I forgot to mention that Representative Peggy Wilson has excused absence today. Okay, do I hear a motion to adopt the CS for discussion?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I would vote, I would make a motion that we accept version LS 1289 Bravo of the bill as a working document.
Okay, without objection, the CS has now been adopted. Thank you. Would you please give us an overview of the bill? And first, Representative Seaton.
Mr. Chairman, though we adopted it, can I ask for an explanation on the part of the CS to change?
Because we're always going to do it if we have to.
Okay, thank you. Representative Hawker, there's nothing in the change of word that would mean that someone could not dispose of POET accounts in the approved manner before the term of before that certain date that the term of office ends. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, since my staff Julie is the one who did this at the request of the APOC, with respect, I'll let her respond to your question.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, Representative Seaton, for the record, my name is Julie Lucky, and I am staff for Representative Mike Hawker. There should be in your packets a memo from APOC regarding the change, and this specific change is actually recommended by, and if I may read from their recommendations. I also think that the APOC, Mr. Dauphiné is online if you want to address this further. The reason that we agreed with the change is that the at is what is in current statute. In the POET reserve account, which is what we are repealing, it was an inadvertent drafting error that it got changed to by, and what we wanted to ensure was that there were no new regulations or we weren't changing anything by inadvertently changing the one word. So it would allow the disposal for the POET funds to be handled in the same way that the disposal for the POET reserve funds are currently handled under the same regulations and by the same guidelines.
Go ahead.
And thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I just want to get it on the public record so it's very clear. So can we ask Mr. Dauphinius if...
Yeah, Mr. Dauphinius, are you online, sir?
Yes, this is Paul Dauphinius.
Please identify yourself for the record.
My name is Paul Dauphinius. I'm the Executive Director for the Alaska Public Offices Commission.
Okay, go ahead. Did you hear the question?
Mr. Chair, no, I didn't, I'm afraid.
Representative Seaton, will you please repeat the question?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, I just wanted to clarify that the disposal of unused funds can occur before the term of office under the same under those same provisions, but that this the way E reads with at the term of office just means that it has to be completed by that at that time. Is that correct?
Through the chair to Representative Seaton, actually, sir, we wanted the wording changed to at end of term of office so that people would not dispose of their funds sometime during their term. One of the appropriate methods of disposal or dispersal, pardon me, is to a political party. There does exist the opportunity for the monies to go to a political party and then back to the candidate. While we do not believe anyone would do that purposefully, we wanted to make sure that even the perception of something like that happening wouldn't be there. So at the end of term of office, deals with that appropriately by not allowing the political party time to get it back during the campaign period.
Follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm just concerned if that's the interpretation of what at the term of at the end of term of office means, and how the commission is going to interpret the time period in which POET account holders have to make that distribution. And we all know what at the end could mean, and I'm just trying to clarify for us as to how that's going to be interpreted for our compliance.
If I might, Mr. Chair.
Representative Hawker.
And not to go to the substance of the word, but again, would point out that the incorporation of the word at in the CS makes the statute as it appears in the CS consistent and exactly the same as the current operative statute.
Mr. Chairman, I realize it does that, but what the purpose of this bill is to clarify for us all what we do with our POET funds, and so we have it before us, and that's why I'm asking the question for the clarity and getting it on the record as to what this means in the current language or the other. So,
and again, and Mr. Chair, to that point,
go ahead.
Mr. Chair, Representative Seaton, exactly to your point here, the idea of having the transfer occur at, you know, again, if you've got leftover money, for it to occur at the end of your one's term of office is so that it would prevent the potential loophole, however improbable, of having a candidate contribute what was left in their POET account to a political party, have the political party give it back to the candidate in that election, allowing them essentially to roll POET funds into you know, from campaign or from term of office to term of office, which is not what was contemplated in the use of POET funds.
And thank you. One more.
And
so I'm just wanting to make sure that we get APOC on record as saying that that's the intent of this. And so if someone is doing, is closing out their account, you know, reasonably close to the at the end of their term of office so that it couldn't accomplish the goal that we're trying to prevent there, in other words, putting it into another campaign fund, that interpretation is a reasonable interpretation of what at the end of office means. And can we just get verification from APOC that that's the intent of that section?
Thank you. Ms. Lucky?
And Mr. Chairman, Representative Seaton, I think to that point, and I'm wondering if Mr. Dauphiné would be able to confirm that. From what I understand, from what the Public Offices Commission was concerned about, I would assume that at the end of term of office would be any time after the election, but before the swearing-in date of the new legislature, and maybe they could confirm that that's what they are anticipating.
Okay.
Can Mr. Dauphiné confirm that for us?
Dauphiné, did you hear that?
Mr. Chair, yes, I did, and I concur with both of what Representative Hawker and Ms. Lucky articulated.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much.
On the record, and that's what I wanted.
Very good. So we have the CS adopted. And now, Reverend Hawker, would you speak to the entirety of the bill and tell us why this should be moved out of committee.
Mr. Chairman, thank you very kindly, members of the committee. Again, yeah, there's a lot of, one of those cases, there's a lot of paper in the bill because you've got long sections of statute to add like one sentence to. So what really is operative here is what this bill does. I think all of us that have been through campaigning cycles know that current statute provides that once you are elected to office, if you have unspent campaign funds that were contributed to your campaign, one of the allowable uses of those excess funds is to put a certain amount of money into what's called a POET account, a public office expense term account. And that money then you can spend with certain under current statute with certain restrictions during your term of office. Well, the way the current statute's written, it says you have to put your money into what's called a POET reserve account, and out of that POET reserve account, a certain amount can be moved into your, I guess, your ability to spend it over the course of the term of office. I'll be honest, I have talked with everyone from the people that wrote that section originally to everyone in office today, and quite respectfully, I don't think anyone quite understands why that reserve account exists, what its what its validity is. When this bill is implemented, it will simply say that you can put the amount in your POET account, which is, I mean, it's the $5,000 for every year you serve in office, and you spend that money sometime during your elected term, period. Do we really care if you spend the money in your House, let's talk House members, it's easiest for us. We get to put $10,000 in a POET account if it's there. Do we really care if that $10,000 is spent on expenses related to our office? Again, that doesn't change in this bill. Whether that's done on the first day of our day in office, ratably throughout our time in office, or at the very end of our time in office. The interpretations of how this reserve account was supposed to operate has always confused people. There's been questions whether does a reserve account mean that it's a separate bank account? Or for a guy like me who's a CPA, does it mean a bookkeeping notation in your books? Where, one set of books, one bank account with multiple accounting sub-accounts, to it. So just one of those very confusing things. It seems to have served no purpose in that I can see from good public policy. And because I have been aware of a lot of legislators really wondering, how do I manage this? What should I do? How do I interpret it? And the interpretations have varied. It just seemed like something we could eliminate, make this much easier on anyone who runs for office and desires to set money aside and use it during their term of office for the statutory allowed reasons.
I'd like to recognize Representative Grunberg has now joined us. Any questions or comments on what we've just heard? Representative Grunberg.
Yes. There was an annotation somewhere from somebody, and I forget who it was, who said that then-Senator Dave Donnelly was involved in this particular piece of legislation. And I talked to Dave a week or two ago to ask if he remembered anything about this particular section. And he was under some impression that the IRS had some concern about either sequestering it or doing something, but he didn't remember, and nobody else did. I think that if it becomes a problem for anybody, we'll hear about it from the IRS, and I co-sponsor the bill. I think it's an important thing. It's just too confusingly written, and nobody really knows what was done. I assume that the Martha Tansick memo has been distributed. Yeah. And I see that Representative Seaton has an amendment that's going to help clarify the remaining issue. And I'm glad you're bringing forth it. It was causing me some considerable concern on whether you had to have separate accounts or not. And just for the record, I have distributed an email from Paul Dauphiné, who's the director of the agency. Next year, they're going to be implementing a program so that for our financial disclosures, all we're going to have to do is put the changes on. And it's going to be something they're doing administratively. It's going to make it a lot easier for us to do this very long form, and I just thought you folks would be interested in getting it.
Thank you very much. Any other questions or comments?
If I might, Mr. Chair, just for clarity, I appreciate Representative Grunberg's both co-sponsorship and the memorandum he requested on the history of this account. It adds to the file immensely. Would just like to state that the comment about the ledge finance disclosures has nothing to do with this bill that is before us.
No, the reason, Mr. Chair, I did it was because in conversations with you, you indicated that you were interested in the broad question of anything that could be done to ease our administrative burden in filling out the forms without sacrificing public disclosure. And since this is a vehicle that's before us, I had been thinking whether we needed to do something to encourage them to make it easier for us to fill out this very long form. And I got this email, which I'll put in the record when the bill goes to the floor also. I think people would be interested in knowing that.
Thank you very much. Any further comments from Representative Hawker or Ms. Lucky? Okay. Any questions here? Is anybody online who would like to testify on this? Anybody in the audience who would like to testify on this? If not, we'll close public testimony. And any questions or comments from the committee? You refer Representative Seaton and Representative Grunberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In everyone's packet, there should be an amendment that is labeled 27LS1289/B.2.
Would you like to move that amendment?
I'd like to move that amendment.
Would you please, okay.
Amendment number one.
Moved, and would you, I'll object for discussion.
Discussion.
Please explain the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And the purpose of this amendment is to, we have a couple of different POET accounts. We have our POET accounts, and there's also municipal POET accounts, of which there are approximately six people in the state that have it. And this just clarifies that those POET accounts are covered under these same rules as we were just passing for ourselves for the distribution of funds.
Representative Johansson.
Could you have the sponsor's reaction to the amendment, please?
Representative
Mr. Chair, Representative Johansson, Representative Seaton, we sponsor welcome the amendment as additional clarity that we're adding to this cleanup bill. Very much appreciate the contribution.
Representative Grunberg.
Thank you. I'd just like the record to reflect Mr. Dauphiné had suggested the amendment, and I support it.
So it's his fault.
He gets the credit, too.
He gets the credit, okay. Any further? Okay. If not, I'll remove my objection. Amendment number one passes. And any other comments? If not, I'll entertain a motion to move the bill. Representative Grunberg.
Move the bill with individual recommendations. The BCS as amended by amendment number one and attached fiscal notes.
Okay. Without objection, the bill passes. We'll take it at ease while we sign the paperwork, and I'm going to excuse myself at this point and hand the gavel over to my trusty vice chair.
Going here, but I don't think it'll be too distracting. Next up on the agenda, we have HB 219. We have the presenter come forward and identify yourself and give us your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Michael Paschal, Office of Representative Eric Feige, here today to introduce House Bill 219 to you. I need to disclose that Representative Feige is Chief of the Chickaloon Volunteer Fire Department, and that I am Assistant Chief and a board member of the Rural Deltana Volunteer Fire Department. Both organizations could possibly be impacted by this bill. One of the things this bill what this bill addresses is what's important to the state and almost every organization in the state. That's money. It's great to be able to come to the state and ask the state for money to provide things to the citizens of the state, but assistance from the state, the federal government, and most types of grants, those types of things all relate to capital expenses and not operating expenses. So fire departments, ambulance services, other organizations struggle to keep the doors open in their community. In some situations, the power to levy taxes provides sufficient funding to operate these departments, but in some cases, that's a problem. When it doesn't, we turn to other sources of money. Depending on where you've been in the state or in the country, you'll find fish fries, pancake breakfast, or pancake suppers, bake sales, bingo, all types of activities to raise money. Sometimes they work, sometimes they don't. The one problem with all of those is they're usually put on by the same volunteers that are providing the emergency service and are trying to train and run the calls and all of those things. So outright donations are always nice because they take less time and input. One alternative that has been popular with fire and EMS organizations is to offer those that give donations on an annual basis a no-charge policy for that organization or to that individual. So if, for example, ambulance service give them $75 a year, if they come to your house and pick you up, then they don't charge you for that call. And that's a common activity in some parts of the country to run that way. Unfortunately, that concept in Alaska has been deemed to be insurance and subject to numerous laws and regulations that become prohibitive to the organization. One option that's in place is to form a health services corporation, but if you do that, you're subject still to the regulations that pertain to health services corporations, and one of the biggest setbacks for an organization is having a bond of $100,000 available as a minimum to provide services. And that, again, that's where the problem continues to come in. If you think of a situation of a remote village, remote community, someone's sick or injured, they need to go to the clinic, somebody wants to start a service to provide that. But the alternative, if they can't start that service, is you just hope for somebody that comes by or a neighbor that happens to be available in the middle of the night to take them. If you charge an individual for the service, it's not a problem to start your ambulance service or your fire department. It's just if you ask for money up front to keep the gas in the trucks, the storage building heated, pay the insurance or any of those things, and then don't in turn charge that person for the service, that you begin to run into the problem. Okay? The same thing you'll find with this, I've talked more about ambulance services, is with fire departments. You might hear it referred to as a subscription fire department, which is similar to your fire service districts you find in the organized municipalities, except that it's per individual, per property. It's not a geographic area where everybody's forced to pay. Individuals pay in voluntarily and become a member. But if that organization goes outside and, say, provides services to someone else and gets charged, and they get back in the same, they're giving one person a benefit and somebody else, and that's where the challenges run in. So you can help with by enacting House Bill 219 to basically exempt these types of organizations from regulation by the Division of Insurance. The bill is fairly simple in that it exempts municipalities and community-based nonprofit organizations from regulation if they receive money in advance and then don't charge for services to those that give them those donations. Before you, a CS for the bill, I believe it's version I, which clarifies some language from the original version that we had.
Excuse me, Mike. Yeah. Would somebody move version I so we know the whole committee's on task here?
Mr. Chairman, I'd move we adopt CS for House Bill 219 version I as our working document.
Thank you. I'll object just for discussion.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And as we heard this through the previous committee, some discussion came up between legal and law and amongst us about a couple of words. So we refined it a little bit to better meet the needs that we were looking for, and that is that the organization is community-based and supplies not only to the solicitation funds, but also to any agreement that might take place between the organization and the individual. With that, entertain any questions you might have concerning the bill.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Seaton and Representative Grunberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, one of the things we've dealt with is air ambulance services around. Are there any of those large, I'll call them businesses, that offer those kind of services that would fall under the category of a nonprofit if it was that? Let's say they're offered by a large nonprofit hospital. Does that fall into this category as well?
Representative Seaton, through the chair. Without the bill in place, they can operate as a large nonprofit, as a health services organization, and they have a slightly different set of rules as to someone that's simply offering what I would refer to as regular medical insurance. One of the changes, if you look between the original version and the CS, was the requirement that it be community-based, and that was the purpose of that, is to clarify that this was for a local organization, not a statewide, regional type of large corporation. It was a community-based organization.
Representative Seaton, follow up?
So to follow up, so just getting it on the record, so the intent of this bill is that it's a community-based organization that provides services within that community. Is that correct?
Representative Seaton, through the chair, that is correct.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And for the committee, we have Linda Hall here from the Division of Insurance, who is here to answer questions, but we'll ask her to come forward and so that she can enlighten us if we're missing something obvious. So any other questions for
Mr. Chairman? I'm just curious about the department that you and your boss are members of. Can you tell me a little bit about that? I read in the backup that you have about 35 subscribers, and how many members, volunteers. Can you tell me just a little bit about the department that you're a member of and your boss is a member of?
Okay. Representative Johansson, through the chair. Representative Feige was instrumental in forming the Chicoloon Volunteer Fire Department. It is in the Matsu Borough, but it's not in a fire service district. They operate as a subscription-based department. I do not know how many members they have. I'm not overly familiar with his organization there. They are all volunteer and provide services as best they can for a fairly remote, small community that's trying to establish the presence of a better fire protection service. The department that I'm assistant chief of and a board member of is Rural Deltana, which services the area outside of the city of Delta Junction in that general area. We cover the same area that encompasses the REAA, so it's about, I believe it's 5,800 square miles. It's about 300 road miles. And we currently have, I believe it's 31 members, which is probably an all-time high for us. To have that many members in our department. We work with the city fire department as well as with the Fort Greely Fire Department in both training and support functions. The city of Delta Junction was one of that prompted this bill. The city of Delta Junction provides ambulance service to the same area actually a slightly larger area than what we service as a fire department. And one of the things that they offered was for individuals to pay up front a $75 fee, in which case if they came out to you to pick you up, they would not bill you. They might bill your insurance company, but they would not bill you individually for any cost of that particular transport. And as you see in the backup information, they got a determination from the Department of Insurance through their attorney that was insurance, and thus they couldn't continue to do that. Our particular department operates on a strictly voluntary donation basis, so this isn't something, although it could impact us, it wouldn't under our current operating plan.
May I follow up?
Follow-up?
Representative Johansson.
31 members, by members you mean volunteer firefighters or members as of subscribers to the service?
Representative Johansson to the community. That would be volunteer firefighters, auxiliary members, and board members. We have one board member that's not a firefighter. But our department doesn't operate in terms of membership as part of the organization that gets served. You're a member by joining the department and serving the department, which is a change for us over what we used to be. So, and we provide the same service equally to everyone within the same geographic area.
Just one more follow-up. And so you testify that this bill does not affect the rural Deltana, but it does affect Representative Feige's department, and we don't have particulars about his department right now.
Representative Johansson, through the chair, the Chickling department operates as a subscription-based department, and so their individuals pay them funds, and they provide structural protection. They provide wildland protection throughout the entire community because of the threat to other homes in the community in the event of a wildland fire. But structurally, they only provide protection to the individuals that have contributed to provide support for the department. So that's where that department is impacted. In our case, because we provide the same services equally to anyone that does or does not donate to us, that's why I say under our current operating plan with Rural Deltana, it would not impact us. It might in the future, but it does not as of today.
Just one follow-up. Sure. So to boil all that down into a very succinct answer, your fire department at this time is not affected, yet Representative Feige's department is affected because of their different structures.
Representative Johansson to the chair, yes, sir.
Thank you very much.
Seeing no other questions, I would like to call Linda Hall up, if you would, Linda.
Are we still going to, are there still objections to the CES?
There still is, yeah, until we can move it when we get into the discussion.
Oh, okay, yeah. Okay. Yeah. I just didn't know what your intent was.
Yeah, just want to leave.
That's fine. I think that's a good idea.
Yeah. So. Linda, if you would, identify yourself for the record and tell us if we're missing something obvious. And I know I can't help but note that there's no, we have no letters of support, complaint, or encouragement from insurance companies themselves. So I appreciate the fact that you're here to guide us. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Linda Hall, Director of the Division of Insurance. And good morning to members of the committee. I don't think you're missing anything. There is the provision as it's written now was done with the assistance of the counsel to the division, because we felt the first version would still be fall with under our definition of transacting insurance. And you did see in your packet a letter that when asked, we don't go out searching for fire departments who are running subscription services. We have gone out searching for air ambulances, companies who are doing subscription services, but that's not our primary mission. The idea of a subscription service falls under the definition of insurance. And so there is a letter here where we were asked the question, and we gave the answer, and I think that's much of what's prompted this bill, was to allow small communities and small community-based organizations to have the ability to collect what we would call subscription amounts of money, have members so that the fire department, the volunteer fire department, or the community who has a small ambulance would be able to provide services to their community. It's my understanding it's not the sponsor's intent to exempt large commercial organizations that provide medical transport services. I don't think you're missing anything. I think you've asked good questions. I'd be happy to, you know, answer any others, but sure. I think it's a policy for this body to determine whether you want these to have regulation under the Division of Insurance, or if you have consumer complaints, there is another branch that will see those. Ed Sniffen and a consumer protection that we have, consumer protection section in the Department of Law. If it doesn't fall under our title, then that section does take consumer complaints and investigate them. So it's not like they will just fall through the cracks. Mm. Our concern has always been the use of the money and making sure if you pay $75 a year for ambulance services and 3 years from now, when you've paid that money, that ambulance service is still in business so they can transport you. I mean, those have been questions that we've asked. But I think the goal here, the intent, is worthy to help communities and community-based services.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Grunberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Three things. Number one, Ms. Hall, aside from the activities that you've outlined, if we exempt these fire departments, et cetera, from entire Title 21, is that going to have any other consequences? In other words, I can understand how they may not want to be regulated and have to go through all the hassle of that, but is the public being deprived of anything else that maybe we should just exempt them from part of it? Or I want to be sure it's on the record what we're exempting them from. Are there any potential unintended consequences if we exempt them from this huge Title 21, which is one of the most largest titles, one of the largest titles, and most obscure I've ever seen?
Through the chair, Representative Grunberg, I don't know how I can comment because I tend to agree and I read it a lot.
Right.
I am not aware of unintended consequences. I think the CS was intended to draw little tighter lines around what's being exempted to, one, clearly draw it out of Title 21, but to also make it community-based. I think that was the reason for the addition of those words. I've had several weeks to look at this bill. I've testified on it before. I've read it. I've read the CS. I have not thought, nor has anyone presented to me, any unintended consequences, and that really was part of my reason for bringing up consumer protection, so that there is a comfort level that if these entities are not regulated under Title 21, there still is a place for a harmed consumer to go and seek relief, seek assistance.
May I please follow? If I could dialogue for a minute, then I don't have to keep asking. That's satisfactory to me, with one caveat on the record, that if, as time passes, the department becomes aware of any other unintended consequence from this, I'd invite the department to please bring that to the attention of the legislature, anything we need to look at. And I don't think we need a letter of intent or anything on that. But, just please let us know. I think that has to be, the onus has to be on the department, not the fire departments for that. Is that agreeable with the department?
Through the chair, Representative Grunberg, yes, I think that's something we would do.
Okay. Second area of questioning. I'm going to flip the question around. I think this bill has great merit. I think it's important for these little departments to be able to do what they're doing. I wasn't aware that this was a problem. Are there any other volunteer organizations that fall into the same category as these fire departments, vis-a-vis the department, the Division of Insurance, that we ought to consider exempting from Title 21 or any part of that? This is, you have your omnibus insurance bills. that like in a circus-like atmosphere, wend their way like an elephant train through the legislature from time to time. I'm sure that it would appear in there, but is there anything, any other organizations that are in similar situations through the chair?
Through the chair, Representative Gruenberg, I'm sitting here trying to think of another circumstance where someone has come to us.
Yes.
And I'm really not thinking of another type of entity. As you can tell, the letter that came out about the fire department subscription service was some time ago. So after that inquiry, we certainly watch and we would track anything like that. But I am not aware in my now 9 years in this position of another type of entity that we've dealt with in this way. I mean, we certainly get into the definition of insurance, but not in the context that you're asking about.
And part of the reason I'm asking that is most of your bills go through Labor and Commerce. This bill does not, and at least in this side of the legislature, will not. And so that's probably a question that they would address in Labor and Commerce. So I'm sort of doing it for them, although I'm not on that committee. Finally, do you have any other bills from your division that are going to come before this committee, this legislature, that you're aware of?
Through the chair, my division has no bills this session at all.
Well, with that, I'd like to put on the record something unusual. this division chairperson, has been in the job a long time, has done a great job, and is about to retire, and I think she deserves this committee and the legislature's thanks. This may be the last time we're going to see her, and I'd just like to put that on the record and offer her our thanks.
Let the record reflect. I see smiles and nodding and appreciation. Thank you, Linda, for your service.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Linda, I got a clarification that the prospective recipient of the services was within the community. The bill doesn't actually say that. It says a community-based nonprofit organization provide to do these services with an agreement for prospective recipients of the services. Is the intention clear enough, or should we add at the end of that sentence prospective recipient of the services within the community so that we don't get an unintended consequence of a community-based nonprofit then using this exemption to expand into a regional or statewide service? And or is your reading of this clear enough that it would not cover the people that are outside the community?
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, the language you suggest would certainly make it clearer. I think the intent of the language is what you're saying, and maybe it's not quite as clear as what you're suggesting would make it. I think in one of the versions that my office worked with the sponsor, we had used the word local at some point. That didn't get in the draft that's before you. But I think that certainly is the intent. I think the sponsors explained that intent. That would be up to you if you wanted to really make sure that local idea, as you've expressed it, was part of the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And just to make the statement, as we get through the discussion here, if we have the sponsors representative up again, I'd like to ask him if that would be friendly to the sponsor as well before I would offer that amendment. I think it's in line with what they want, and I think as long as we're doing statute, we should make it entirely clear that
we don't get an unintended consequence beyond what the sponsor intends or what the committee intends. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any other questions from Representative Johansson?
Thank you. That was one of my questions. You testified that the intent of the bill was good, and my question would be, does the language fit the intent, in your opinion? And I think we've had a little bit of a discussion about that this morning, and that's a concern of mine. reading some of the minutes from CNRA, there was a question about size of municipality or defining a municipality, because the language simply says municipality, and we have municipalities ranging all sorts of sizes. I'm not sure how this language could be used by any size of municipality to get to some of those unintended consequences that maybe some of the other members on the committee are talking about. I think the intent of the bill might be good, but and this is probably for the sponsor, but for you, your discussions in the other committees about municipal size, and then when the sponsor's staff comes back up, I'm going to inquire as to whether the Municipal League has weighed in on this, because we're talking about municipalities, unless I'm completely reading the language incorrectly in the bill. But your discussions, you had some back and forth in the prior committee about community size. Do you have any sort of insight for us on that?
Through the chair, Representative Johansson, not really in terms of size. I don't think it's intended to mean the municipality of Anchorage, but it probably doesn't narrow that. Probably the sponsor's staff would be a better place to do that. But it is, I think what I'm looking at the bill, what it looks like on the surface before you dig into some of those types of questions, is the intent. We've worked with small fire departments, small, and we've gotten into the air ambulance companies, but my understanding from speaking with the sponsor was this is really for small, and I don't know if municipalities are doing the ambulance fire services. It seems to me that organizations that are targeted to benefit from this are more unorganized than we might find in some of the, I hate to use the term because it's not something I'm real familiar with, the organized boroughs or larger municipalities. But I think it would be good to clarify.
I'm sorry?
I think it would be good to clarify.
Size.
Size.
Thank you.
Good. And now I need a clarification. Thank you. It'd be good to qualify that if we want to restrict this option from a large municipality, right? Is that what you're saying?
If you do.
Do you? Yeah, okay. Because do you see any downside? I mean, what I'm sitting here thinking is why would we want to restrict it? If you have a large municipality and people are paying property taxes and they have fire service or ambulance service, you know, as a result, you know, why not leave the option there for a volunteer organization for maybe a, because a municipality is so large, you know, for maybe a subset of that, you know, area or whatever. I don't see it as necessarily something we want to do. I just throwing it out there, you know. Thanks for raising the question. Representative Gruenberg.
This is an issue I hadn't thought about. Anchorage does not have currently a volunteer fire department. I don't know if areas within Anchorage, Eagle River, I think they might. They do. We have the senator from Eagle River here, and maybe he would have some thoughts on this particular. No, you don't. Okay. you know, it used to be.
That's wisdom.
it used to be that we had a volunteer fire department in Anchorage, and it was very active. That was before my time, and I know there isn't one now, but I don't know whether Anchorage should not be exempted. I'm sure that if anybody is looking at this in the municipal government, this bill, they're probably expecting that Anchorage is covered. I would hate to bring them back under the administration, you know, the Department of Insurance, without making certain that that they would want or feel that they ought to be regulated. The bill currently does not draw that distinction. I am loath to change the policy on the spot without looking at that. And I would request that if the representative from Ketchikan wants to do that, we need to get a little input from at least the Anchorage. And I'm going to look at Senator Dyson here. I think that we need to, from your part of the city particularly, need to have some input on the effect on Eagle River of the if yep. Johansson's going to do this.
So Linda has a follow-up.
Yeah, could I have a follow-up?
Please, here we go.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think I don't want this to get to a point where we're talking about we don't regulate the fire departments. We don't regulate ambulance services. What we're regulating or not, what's exempt under this bill, is the selling of a subscription service.
Right.
Where you see on television one of the air flight services advertising, you pay $75 a month, and then when you need you need transportation, they will transport you. They'll collect your insurance money, but if there's a balance above that, they won't charge you. So we're talking really what we have considered to be under our definition of insurance, an insurance product. And that's really what we're talking about in this bill, is exempting this product from a municipality and from a nonprofit community organization who may run a medical transport service, or they may have a volunteer fire department, and it's not funded. I would assume the Anchorage Fire Department is funded in somebody's budget.
Through the chair, I'm not talking about the Anchorage Fire Department. I'm talking about the Eagle River or Chugiak Volunteer Fire Group. And I just know there is something out there that's a volunteer organization, because they are not as covered by the municipal fire department. I don't know whether they have bake sales or not, but I would hesitate not to give them the benefit of this bill unless we really check with them and see what effect that's going to have. I don't represent that part of town.
Do we have any other questions for Linda?
In other words, I agree with the vice chairman on this one.
Yeah.
Thanks. You know, the reason I bring this up, again, in the last committee, Representative Gardner talked about whether the sponsor would oppose language that would allow fire department to require subscription service for communities where property owners are already paying property taxes to help support a fire department. And that got me thinking about, you know, in my district, we have a borough, two cities in the borough, Ketchikan and Saxman. Both of them have fire departments, professional fire departments. On the north end of town, we have the North Tongass Volunteer Fire Department, which is a subscription-based fire department located within the borough. In the south of town, we have a completely different entity, the South Tongass Volunteer Fire Department. Okay, so they all exist under the umbrella of one borough. We've got two municipal fire departments, all underneath one borough. Everybody pays property taxes. City residents pay city taxes. Oftentimes, the city department, when the fire is big enough, will cross over the jurisdictional lines, go out into the borough and help fight a fire, because that's just what they do. So from my perspective, moving this out, and there was no resolution of Representative Gardner's question in the prior committee. It just went away and the bill was passed out for whatever reason. The answers were never given. So understanding from my perspective, just moving this bill out without really understanding how all of those different moving parts work is troublesome for me. I would like to have
at least a couple days to figure out, talk to my people, and find out how all of these moving parts. That's why I ask about, you know, the intent of the bill seems nice, but do the words all add up to, you know, nobody cares about the intent when they're looking at the statute until it gets to the Supreme Court. So I feel a little uncomfortable. If the chair wants to move it, I'm not going to oppose it.
Yeah, we're getting ahead of ourselves a little bit, Representative Johansson. Do you have any, that, unless you have further questions for Linda Hall?
Nope.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The topic of a mandatory requirement, you know, in addition to property tax, that everybody could be required. This is a solicitation or an agreement. I don't think that anybody is talking about a mandatory requirement. So do we, would it be more clear if it said a solicitation or a voluntary agreement, so that we know that we're not having a municipality impose a basically almost a tax, and that, you know, I mean, I think that's what we've all been talking about, is soliciting and a voluntary agreement between individuals, basically this idea of insurance option. But I'm trying to, I heard in the discussion here the portion of, okay, people are paying property tax, but could the fire department of a municipality come in and say, okay, we're going to have, now that we're exempt, we're going to have this mandatory that everybody's got to pay this assessment or whatever it's going to be, but I'm not sure that it would be assessment. I'm trying to make sure that we don't have a place in here. So Ms. Hall, would it, do we need the caveat of voluntary in there, or is that just superfluous?
Through the chair, it's not something I had thought about either, and I'm not sure that I'm the one to give that advice. If you, as this committee, want to make sure that these solicitations cannot turn into mandatory assessments, then it probably should say so.
Okay, any other questions? Thank you, Linda. Okay, I don't have any record here of any other public testimony. So before we get to the discussion of the bill, we'll pull the sponsor back up. I'll remove my objection. The bill's before us. Okay.
So we've adopted the CS.
We've adopted the version I as a CS. So I think what where we'll start is Representative Johansson, if you wanted to make your comments so he can respond.
Sure.
He heard him. I mean,
well, it's just a whole lot of stuff that I didn't really think about in reading the bill and the minutes. And, I mean, because municipality is in here, has there been any feedback from anybody outside of your boss's particular area?
For the record, Michael Pascal, Office of Representative Feige, Representative Johansson through the chair. The discussion that I have had has been with numerous departments around the state and how this might impact them. I think if you'll, I can answer most of the questions or concerns that you have, I believe, hopefully to your satisfaction. If you taking them in several different pieces here, obviously with Alaska, one of the biggest challenges we always deal with is the diversity of the state makes it very difficult to write something that applies to the whole state. Regarding to size, I come out of a community in North Carolina that's about 750,000 people that has a hodgepodge of county operated, county funded, nonprofit ambulance and fire services, and the ambulance services, almost all, including the county services, operate under a similar type of plan where they, because they charge to run calls, they offer people in the community the opportunity to pay a fee. At the time I was there, it was $75, in which case, if they come out and pick you up,
then they don't charge you. The what worked for them in that case was particularly the elderly that may not have as good of insurance coverage could pay $75 to the county, and then when the county, when any service in the county, whether it was the county-run service or one of the nonprofit services responded, they did not bill that individual for the service. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of how the idea came about years ago. Looking at Anchorage in particular as a larger municipality, as far as I'm aware, Anchorage has two volunteer fire departments within the municipality, and that would be Girdwood and Chugach, I believe.
Yeah.
Chugach, I'm sorry, I have to get the right ones there. I believe both of those are within the municipality and are volunteers. I'm not as familiar with their dynamics with the municipality as I am with Fairbanks. And in, if you look at Fairbanks and the Fairbanks North Star Borough, you have the city-run municipal department that operates within the city of Fairbanks, but then you have nonprofits that operate throughout the borough, providing contractual services with the borough, with the exception of North Pole, where again you have a municipality providing the services. And in the case of that borough, most of those services provide fire and EMS services. And so the different organizations there could do different things, or the borough could do something as a policy-wide, because in the example there, the billing is done for EMS services, as far as I'm aware, by the borough. It could be different within the city of Fairbanks. The borough does the billing and then simply pays the private nonprofit a certain fee. So presumably in that case, the borough could set a policy saying, well, if you pay us $100, then we won't bill you if we go out. So there are those types of options there. Looking at the mutual aid type of situation, it would be, for example, with fire departments, most fire departments tend to respond to other agencies' needs as they can. There's some work in the legislature now on improving that situation across the state. But again, we're looking at base funding. That's the idea here, is how do we get base funding? So that's what we're trying to accomplish. The question from the previous committee with Representative Gardner pertained more to, and I believe she actually used the term double dipping, and that is basically in a situation, and I can show you how that is already happening in the city of Fairbanks. For example, the city funds the fire department entirely, but they do charge if they run an EMS call and also if they run a fire call. So if you go to Fairbanks and you're in a wreck in Fairbanks and a fire engine responds to that wreck, they're going to bill you if you're the owner of that vehicle. Okay, so those types of activities are taking place. We're not trying to address any of those types of things. It's only a way to say if you charge, then we can provide money up front and it not be insurance. So we're trying not to expand, I guess, any services or change how any of the services are taking place. I hope that answers some of your questions. I'm not sure if it got to all of them or not, but I would be.
Okay, before you do, though, I want to say that there's several have asked that we hold the bill over for one round here, and I'll leave it up to the chair what, you know, you can work it out with him. But I don't want to take any more than another 10 minutes to get the questions that you have on the record and clear as quickly and succinctly as you can. Then we'll set the bill aside and go from there. So go ahead with your follow-up.
Have you had communication with the Alaska Municipal League about their opinion on the bill?
Representative Johansson, through the chair, I have not had direct communication with them about it. I didn't really see it as a major impact item for them, so I didn't contact them. I have spoken with one of their members who I believe is on their board, but who is also a fire chief, and he would, I'm sure, have discussed it with them, but I'll be happy to follow up with them.
Yeah, they're located here, and they have a full-time lobbyist in the building every single day. So I'd be interested. And then one other note that's not a question, but I don't see any other in the backup, any other volunteer organizations across the state besides the one that you guys are a member of that have expressed support. Are they ambivalent, or have you not seeked out any support documentation from any other volunteer fire department across the entire state?
Representative Johansson, through the chair. The actual emphasis was this was through the city of Delta Junction, which I don't have any association with. That's what started this, was their determination. The people that are doing it currently, I believe, through my couple of discussions that I had, kind of lay low because what they're doing appears to violate insurance laws. And so I'm not sure they want to come forward. If you understand, as the division indicates, they're not actively seeking them. They're not actively trying to come out of the woods and say this is what we're doing. But we have specifically talked to Salcha as well, and they're in support of it. They're a new department from a fire standpoint.
Representative Gruber.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You were done. I'm sorry.
I would if that's the case and this bill doesn't pass, I would have great expectations the Division of Insurance would figure out all of these people who are running under the radar. I mean, that's astonishing, that what I just heard.
Representative Gruber.
This may also be for Ms. Hall. As the onion unfolds here, I'm seeing some other potential issues that may come up. There is what's called the insurance tax. Maybe could Ms. Hall come up with Mr. Haskell so we can have them both up at the same time?
Yeah,
don't go away.
There's room for two.
There is the insurance tax, and I'm not sure. Certainly, it seems to me, if it's a municipality or a 501c3 organization, which is what the bill covers, you have to be a 501c3 to be, or a municipality, as I understand it, to get this benefit. The donor would get a tax deduction. And what I'm wondering is, do health insurance companies who would normally pay for this service, they're getting relieved of that obligation for people who put up $75 a month or whatever. And since they are getting the benefit of this, ultimately the insurance company would be, presumably. Would there be any benefit in allowing a tax credit against the insurance premium for any company that were to provide the payment for any of its insured in these areas, if we were to tack a tax credit against the insurance tax on this? It might be a little extra work, but it might provide some money for these volunteer fire departments. And I'd ask Ms. Hall that question.
Through the chair of Representative Gruenberg, it's my understanding that if there is insurance available, the companies that are selling the subscription plans bill the insurance. They bill the insurance, keep the proceeds because they're the provider of the service, and if there's inadequate limits of insurance, they won't bill the balance. But part of the way they are able to provide service at these lower levels is that they are already billing the insurance company. So the insurance company is paying as well as the subscriber.
Okay. Thank you.
It makes me love and appreciate our free market system. Services in.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Can I just offer a couple of conceptual amendments at this time to get those taken care of?
Describe them. Okay. Don't hold them, okay. But describe them, and then we'll...
Okay, the first one too was at the end of line 8, and line 12 would have been adding the words within the community at the end to identify that we take care of any regional expansion concerns, and that would be a conceptual amendment that we talked about before, but right. I'm just trying. Would it be appropriate at this time to make that motion?
Well, Specifically, I know it's conceptual, but where are you?
At the end of line 8, after the prospective recipients of the service within the community, so we know who they are sponsoring and who they are soliciting. You know, these are community-based services or within the municipality, so we're talking about solicitation and agreements within that community. And that was, I believe we talked with the sponsor, and that was the sponsor's intent, and just for clarifying language.
Out of respect for the chair, I'm going to just say it's well-described, let's hold off on the actual offering amendment.
So. Okay, that's fine. And then the other one that I'd like to get agreement from the sponsor as well as adding voluntary on line 5 and line 9 between, change A to A, and to A, but a voluntary agreement instead of an agreement to make sure that we're not providing a mechanism in here to create another name for an assessment that would go out to all the population that serves. So it would just read, this title does not apply to a solicitation or a voluntary agreement to provide ambulance or emergency services.
So the same thing on line 9, yes.
Yes, and the same thing on line 9. So that would be
okay.
What I would offer next time as conceptual number 2.
Right, okay. And then you can get together with the sponsor fine-tune that if you like. Representative Peterson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And along those lines, what the representative from Homer was talking about, maybe we could have Ledge Legal look at those conceptual amendments and see if they would do what we're intending that they do in this bill.
Okay, let's see. How to do that? We'll leave that up to the sponsor to confirm, and I think we'll be in good shape on that. Representative Johnson.
I know you want to get to the next bill, but I think Mr. Wallenberg, we're not going to be spending 45 minutes because it's such a worthy bill that the senator has brought towards us. So I really want to make sure we put these very important issues on the table before the bill comes back, mm-hmm. if you don't mind. I understand that Ms. Hall has an answer to my concerns because I'm not familiar with all of the insurance stuff, but if we're just talking about insurance to cover a transportation or whatever, when I'm talking about insurance, I'm thinking something bad happens and you don't have insurance, you know, it's going to cause a whole lot of pain and agony on people. And we're talking about fires and medical transports, and to me that's big money and big risk. And so if you can allay my fears a little bit about that, I would appreciate it.
Through the chair, Representative Johansson, you had made a comment earlier when I said, and I had said, that we aren't out digging, looking for the... I was shocked at the last hearing I attended to hear testimony that these subscription services were being sold. And I said to one of my staff, I guess we should start writing more letters. That makes me feel somewhat uncomfortable to sit in a hearing. Now it's going to make him feel uncomfortable that I'm sitting here taking notes on what fire departments I've heard are providing the subscription services. We don't regulate the services.
Right.
But we have a definition of insurance that brings the subscription pieces under our title. And I had no idea until about 3 weeks ago that we had some of these little entities out here. You can see in your packet, the last one we knew, we wrote a letter and said, no, you can't do this. We've had that same experience with subscription services with air ambulance services. We do have one air ambulance service today that has an actual insurance program. They found someone who would write a backstop that allows them to continue their subscription services, selling that. But there is an insurance product involved through a lot of digging and prodding that we did when we discovered that. So it's not like we are just ignoring situations that are out there. But these hearings have posed a difficult question for me, and it's kind of like, Michael saying that, no, he doesn't have people running in here to testify because I'm sitting here. this is somewhat dampening on a public policy or public meetings.
Mr. Chairman, I might. You know, in an unorganized area that has a volunteer deal and something bad happens and there's no insurance and it gets down to there's some sort of settlement or something happens in the courts or something somewhere, somebody sues, ultimately in an area like that, the state is on the hook. I mean, the state is going to have to cover that because there's really, you're not going to sue Chicolin for $20 million. You're not going to get it, or some area unorganized out in the middle of nowhere. And I don't know, maybe the resident attorney can set me straight, but it's just a little nervous when you start talking about places not having insurance and the deepest pocket is the state of Alaska, and who knows what's going to happen. I mean, I just guess I don't know enough about it to be comfortable, so... That's fairly obvious to the entire committee by now.
Quickly, Representative Grunberg.
I would ask the bill sponsor to do something for me in the meantime. Please check with Girdwood and Chugiak and see their... Let me ask through the chair. Representative Johansson, are you thinking of a geographical or population amendment based amendment? If you're not, I'm not going to pursue this.
Mr. Chairman... I'm thinking about it.
Okay, then I'd ask you please to check with Chugiak and Girdwood and see how such an amendment. Are you going to get something drafted?
I'm going to leave this committee room and call my folks and see what they think. And
I would ask you please to let the sponsor and me know if you're going to do that, and then I'd ask the sponsor to please check with if this is going to occur. With Girdwood and Chugiak and see their feeling on the amendment, and so we can, would you do that?
Representative Seaton, we want to wrap this up. For
you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and just to put in the other comment on geographic, I mean, municipalities are boroughs or cities, and so on the Kenai Peninsula borough, we have a number of cities, and we have a number of fire service areas in there, and so, you know, I wouldn't want to see something come forward that would say we're going to exclude area-wise when you actually have all these smaller nonprofits that are small service companies that are providing the area and could use that. And we say anybody that's in a large either population or area borough can't avail themselves of this. And so I'm just raising that other aspect, not in the high population area of Anchorage Borough, but in the large geographic area of the Kenai Peninsula that has multiple both cities and fire districts that are not inside of cities there. So just as we go forward. Thanks.
Representative Grunberg, please make, you know, wrap it up if you can. Be succinct.
I'll wrap. That's W-R-A-P, not R-A-P. I would ask, this, since this is so nebulous and it would require us to do various kinds of checking, I would ask Representative Johansson, if you're going to offer such an amendment, to please get something to us as quickly as we can so we can vet it in our communities, since it will have a major effect. But I can't deal with this until I see what you're going to offer. And I know that's kind of unusual, Mr. Chair, to have something a little bit in advance of the hearing, but I find this very difficult to deal with unless I have something in front of me. That's just not fair to me unless I can see what you got there.
In light of the short 30 days we have left, that's a good suggestion. Thank you. Final word, Mike.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to just clarify one thing because the question of departments being out there, and I don't believe these departments realized that charging subscriptions and offering the services violated the insurance law, so I want to make sure that until the city of Delta Junction asked the question of the department or the Division of Insurance, I don't believe it was clear in most people's minds. So these departments that are doing that now are going, what are we going to do? So
I cannot help but respond. That's why I think it's a very good bill. You know, we got too much regulation out there. I love the market. I love the way it works. You know, for what it's worth, I'm with you. And all I would ask is we get into the weeds in this thing a little bit. Try to keep it as broad as you can, so the more people that we can remove the regulations from, the better, for what it's worth. I mean, some housekeeping stuff. I'm going to close public testimony, and the reason I'm doing that is, just a second, I'm not closing the discussion yet. The is so that the chair can have a starting point for the, you know, for the next hearing. It's it can be reopened.
I'm going to change something I said. I'll do the checking with Girdwood and Chugiak. Ted, if you can get the information to me, my staff will check with those two departments in the municipality. I won't put you in the that one.
Thank you. State Affairs is a great committee. Like, very interesting. We have SCR 18 before us, and I see the sponsor is Senator Dyson. And if you would present your bill, and
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thanks to the committee for hearing this. Over much of the Western world, August 4th of 2012 will be set an opportunity to extol the virtues and recognize the service of one of our generation's greatest heroes. Raoul Wallenberg is listed in Guinness Book of Records as having saved more people than is known of any Homo sapien in recorded history. So this is a one-time thing, and I would encourage your support of it, and I think it's worthy. Solomon said 3,000 years ago, as a man thinketh in his heart, so is he, and it is my presupposition that all of us are becoming like our heroes and holding up heroes of our time for all of us to want to be emulate is a worthy thing. I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Any questions from the committee? Any comments?
I have some comments, yes. I had no idea about this story, to my own ignorance, but having the bill brought up made me do some kind of curious, as natural, and did some investigating on some of the things, and I don't think you can fit everything that this man did and for all those people into a resolution. I think it's a great thing to do, but it's really is an amazing act and selfless sort of things that this person did, and I really am glad that you brought it forward. And these are one of these really good things that we can do to honor people who are just epitomize the greatness of humanity. So I appreciate you bringing this forward,
Representative Greenberg.
Yes, I was pleased to co-sponsor the bill. And obviously, I have an interest in this. I'm just wondering if something else we should do is send a copy of this resolution to our delegation and ask if they could introduce legislation making this a national day.
Yeah, my response. I'll be glad to do that. I believe there are other efforts underway to do that very thing from other jurisdictions, and similar things are being done in many states. I just might add, as a point of personal interest, U.S. Congressman, I think in California, Tom Lantos, was one of the men rescued by Wallenberg, and he served on the staff of Mike Gravel and was a close personal friend of Barney Gottstein, who is also a friend of mine.
Wow.
And so there's some in-state contacts here. I think your suggestion is a good one, and I will follow up on that.
Mr. Chair, I think Congressman Lantos, I know he was a Holocaust survivor, and he may have been the only Holocaust survivor to serve in Congress.
I think that's true, and I was just told that there is a resolution in Congress as we speak.
Oh, do we, and this is, I don't think you can turn a concurrent resolution into a joint resolution. I don't think the rules, it'd have to be something different. But whether it would be advisable to, as part of this, have something in here urging Congress to proclaim this as a national day.
Yeah, I appreciate that, and as I said, I'll work on that. Given the limits here of our time before the session's over and things jamming up, I would prefer that we not make any changes that would require committee action or going back before the Senate.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I just want to thank the good senator from Eagle River for bringing this forward. I actually saw something, I believe, on the History Channel about this, and so I think it's an excellent resolution, and I'm willing to make a motion to move the resolution if the committee is ready for that.
I got to check with the Girdwood Fire Department.
please be our
Chairman,
guest.
Mr. Chairman, can I make one more quick comment? You know, I'm just sitting here thinking about the comments that were made, and it's, you know, we don't get great heroes unless there's great adversity. It just doesn't happen. You know, I grew up in the 80s, and, you know, the biggest thing that happened when I was junior high and in high school was the Brits invaded the Falkland Islands, you know. I mean, that was the extent, which was, for the people who did it, probably a pretty horrible experience. But on a grand scale of things, you know, it's hard for me to relate to great heroism, and it really takes something horrible to happen. And the kids that volunteer to go into the armed forces now are experiencing some of those things, and their friends in high school know people that are being heroes and things like that. So I you know, it's, we can't forget, you know, for our kids' sake. It's hard for me to impart that experience on my children. I have a 12-year-old and 2 8-year-olds. I don't have the personal experience to do it, but bringing these things forward, and they'll be here on Monday, and hopefully this will be on the floor while they're guest paging, and for them to experience that is really important for those generations who haven't experienced that. So, again, I really appreciate your work.
I can't help but say dittos, and that it's particularly appropriate in light of the all the struggles we have with privacy and internet, you know, information is out there. I was reading the other day where it was in the Economist magazine, where America is, as a populace, is not that concerned, you know, about our information that gets floating around. Whereas if you go over to Europe, where they have a more immediate reminder, there are more concerns. So, again, thanks, and appreciate bringing it forward.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Senate Concurrent Resolution 18 from the State Affairs Committee with individual recommendations and accompanying fiscal year.
Okay, the bill. Seeing no objections, the bill passes from committee. I can't help but add that my mentor and former boss here, I did not torment him. I knew he's interested in the volunteer part of everything. Thank you for your patience anyway. Okay, we're adjourned at 9:35.